Welcome to the 59th edition of the Gooner Podcast, recorded immediately after number 58 on the Monday after Arsenal beat West Ham United. Thanks as ever to our sponsors, GoonerShirts.com, the website for all your quality unofficial Arsenal t-shirt requirements. I'm your host, David Udo, and still with me are Gooner founder Mike Francis, Mark Brindle from the Arsenal Supporters Trust and Red Action, along with Vital Football and Gooner writer Tim Stillman. So, gentlemen, would you spend £50 million on a precocious midfield player with gammy hamstrings? And if not, have we missed a trick by not selling Cesc Fabregas to Barcelona? Mark Brindle.
Thanks. No, I think we should keep him in the team for as long as possible. I think he's the heart of the side at the moment. And just such good quality that we need to keep him. If he's going to go this summer, and you know, the sort of perceived knowledge is that he will go, I'm sure we'll still get a very good price for him. We shouldn't bow down to these clubs. At the end of the day, we are the Arsenal, and we should take top dollar for him. And the fact is, if we kept him even for one more season, it's given the chance for somebody to naturally evolve through the system who could well take his place, although I'd rather see both of them in the team.
Tim, your thoughts?
I think there are some players, irrespective of their hamstrings, that are too good to let go. I think Cesc qualifies. I think Cesc, we've been spoiled the last few years with some good players. Cesc is up there for me with Henri, with Pires, with Bergkamp. If we look like we're grooming Wilshere and hopefully Ramsey to come back as well, if he can come back the same player. I think it was important for us to make a statement as much as anything. I think the Fabregas transfer saga also showed how right the club's got it on contracts. And I know people often complain about how we hand out contracts willy-nilly, but this is why, because it gives us a strong hand in the market. And I think Fabregas was a good indication that since Gazidis has come in, we've got that absolutely right, whereas we didn't always in the past.
Mike, I saw you mouthing the words Robin Van Persie as Tim was responding to that question. Okay, you know, same side of the same coin. Robin Van Persie, regarded by every player in the squad as our best player, our most skillful footballer, our talisman, the taker of the best penalty I've ever seen in my life, but the man has legs made of chocolate. What about Robin? Should he stay or should he go? And regardless of that, how would he fit into the current side? Would you drop Marouane Chamakh, the 21st century Alan Smith, to accommodate a one-legged, chocolate-legged Dutchman?
Probably not right now. I think Van Persie's going to have his work cut out coming back in the side. You know, the team have been performing well. Chamakh has led the line superbly and has given us so many more options up front, brings in players brilliantly. That Van Persie did the same, but you just can't rely on him. You know, we've said this time and time again, probably three or four seasons on the trot now, where you go, if Van Persie stays fit, we're in with a real chance. What are we talking about? We all know he's not going to stay fit. So, you know, why are we even beginning to dream? Would I get rid of him? I don't want to, because I like him. I think he's a great player. But again, a bit like Arshavin, I suppose, in the previous podcast, was, you know, if a good offer came in for him, could we get a more reliable player coming through? Somebody that you can count on for 30 games out of 38 in the league. Because clearly you can't with Van Persie.
He'll be straight back in the team.
Oh, he's one of Wenger's favourites. One of Wenger's favourites, straight back in. I agree completely.
No question whatsoever.
In place of who?
Chamakh.
Yeah. He'll be straight back in the team, and I totally support Wenger on it as well. I think he's, without a doubt, a world-class player. If he gets injured again, we've got cover for him now.
Would you not maybe stick him on the right to let him cut inside and use his left foot, as the Dutch have done to awesome effect?
I would prefer him more if we're going to try and do some, not playing right up the top, he's playing as the link man rather than on the right.
I think he's deadly in the box though. I think he's our best finisher. I think he's got a lot of what Chamakh's got physically, bringing other players into play. I think there's one thing he's got that Chamakh doesn't quite have yet, and that's that he can make a chance for himself. He doesn't need a great pass. If you remember his goal at City last year, at City away, that kind of thing. I couldn't see Chamakh score as much as I've been impressed with Chamakh. I think, to use a horrible phrase, Van Persie's got a bit of an X factor in that he can do that. He can make a chance all by himself, and I think that's why I'd go back in the team and I'd put him back in. But if you know Chamakh gives him some good competition, then all the better.
Well, it's unfortunate we are stuck between the devil and the deep blue sea with him, because he is I think he's our best footballer. Not necessarily our best player, but he's our best footballer. But having said that, can you afford to try and build the outline of a team around someone who's going to be available for 15 games out of 60? Mike, you're itching to.
No, I mean I kind of agree with what people are saying, and I do appear to be in the Steve Ashford role tonight, so I'm just going to play devil's advocate to anything anyone says. Nigel Stefanos was the Latvian. I just think, you know, at what point do we say enough's enough? And maybe we're not quite there yet, but you know, one more, he comes back, I think three games in, one more injury. I think you've got to start asking questions.
It's at that point the trainer throws the towel in.
Yeah.
And just says thanks.
I think it'd be a great shame if that doesn't.
I agree.
Absolutely agree. He's a fantastic player, and you know, his default striking is up there with the best. You know, he takes a great free kick, he takes fantastic penalties, as you said earlier, Dave. But you know, you just wonder when is the time going to come when he's going to play 20 games successive.
I'm not name dropping or anything like that, but I have met him. And he is such a nice guy, and he is totally Arsenal.
Mm.
And you know, he wants to do it so much. And it was when the contract was up for renewal last time I met him, and he said straight away, he said, "Look, you know, don't worry, I am signing. Whatever happens, I want to play for Arsenal. I want to play for Arsene Wenger." And that's the sort of attitude you want from players. And it's just such a shame about his injuries.
It is very much. However, having said that, I mean, Who are these guys wearing the 14 and 52 shirts, you know, who have come out of nowhere? I mean, I remember last year, he's one of my favourite players because he tried so hard. But only we had this, you know, Bambi on ice type character coming in, playing centre forward, blocking his own teammates' shots on the goal line, falling over his own face. Suddenly he gets a Dutch heiress up the duff, and suddenly Nicholas Bentner's come back from 3 months injured, you know, is finishing one chance every single time. Theo Walcott has coupled his pace with the ability to play football. Again, dynamite finishing, making the right decisions. God forbid the worst does happen to Robin van Persie. Maybe our cup doth runneth over with attacking players to that effect, Tim.
Well, I'm a mixed bag on this one because I'm probably the biggest Bentner fan out there.
I thought I was the only one. Oh, Tim, we'll set up a Facebook group.
I've always been a big fan because I think, you know, there are some young players that come into a team like Arsenal and they get a bit of criticism and they can't handle it. He always handled it. Whenever he missed chances, I know it's a bit of a cliche, but, you know, he got himself in there and went for the next one. You watch him when he misplaced the pass, he wanted the ball. Seconds later, he wanted it. He wanted to put it right. And I always thought that would serve him well in the long term. And I think we're beginning to see that born out now. Walcott is someone that I wasn't sure about. I hadn't really made a firm decision one way or the other, but this I'm liking the Walcott I'm seeing this season, and I wonder how pivotal his exclusion from the World Cup squad was. Whether that just gave him, maybe that gave him a bit of a rest that he's never had. Maybe it just gave him something to think about. I don't know. I'm not sure I really care that much. Because he looks devastating this season, and his finishing looks top draw. Not just his goals against Newcastle, but the one up at Blackburn where he broke the net.
Absolutely,
you know, great finish.
Mark, where do you stand? have you got a wry grin creeping onto the side of your face at the prospect of Bentner and Walcott's season only starting now at the beginning of November?
Well, I think it's, in a way I've got a wry grin because I think it proves all these rent-a-quote idiots completely wrong. You know, these people say that he hasn't got a football brain.
Steve Ashford. Like
well, the fact of the matter is, I would rather rely on the opinion of Arsene Wenger than Stan Collymore, Mark Lawrence and people like that. If Mark Lawrence was such a good judge of footballers, then he should have become a manager instead of just sitting on a couch even, and spouting off. And I'm not so much a, you know, Bentner, I think he's a good player and I think he will score goals. But, you know, Theo, fantastic. What can he say? You know, he's reacted. The little break in the summer has probably motivated him. I think maybe some of the younger guys at Arsenal, you know, they're on good salaries. Maybe they maybe felt they didn't have anything to prove, but I think it's slowly dawning on them that they've got to win trophies. And I think they're both coming through really strong. Bentner, you know, I think he's another one. Maybe if he hadn't been a professional footballer, he would have still been a virgin sort of thing, you know. The only time he got his pants down was outside a nightclub before. Like, you know, so maybe the maturity's come now with the fact that, you know, the baby's on the way.
In fact, from what my understanding is, although he's got the woman pregnant, he had about 15 goes. He got, you know, some on her tits, some on her legs, you know, but eventually.
If you've seen that,
he kept plugging away.
I quite appreciate what he was up to there.
Now, going back to Stan Collymore, in fairness, I mean, the only time I sort of take him on board was if we had him playing on the left wing against Lars Jakobsen on Saturday. I would have liked his opinion, because if anyone knows anything about beating Swedes, it's probably Stan Collymore. Mike, Theo Walcott and Nicholas Bentner, it's November and they're only just starting. Marouane Chamakh's settled nicely into the team. Do we play Nasri? Do we play Riziki? We're arguing about whether Andre Arshavin should even be in the team. You know, we're going to score one more than you, Vindaloo.
This is quite alien to us, isn't it, over the last few seasons? We've actually got choices in the squad. You know, you've got no problems if Bentner comes in and replaces Chamakh for a game. You've got no problems if Walcott comes in. Competition for places, hallelujah. We've been saying it for so long now, and, you know, we're actually seeing it. They're delivering. And they are pushing the other players, the players that are in the first team at the moment, they're pushing them on. Great stuff. It's what we wanted. Walcott, I think his problem has always been he's just been a bit too lightweight, hasn't he? He's been, gets knocked over and shoulder pops out and that's him out for 3 months. This year he just seems to be a bit more resilient, notwithstanding the fact that he missed 6 games after getting injured on international duty. That just makes him an Arsenal player for me. But, you know, he there's been a few games. I think the Blackburn game was probably one where he bounced back up from a number of fairly hefty challenges straight away. And it's like, good to see.
Can I just say, it's not November, it's Movember. Grey moustache.
It's a bit lost on podcast.
Well, if you can see it, guys, it's a miracle after that.
By the time you're listening to this right now, listeners, whether it be at the office, whether it be at home in the evening, I'd say we're probably 10 days away from the annual visit to Ashburton Grove by our neighbours from up the road. And the visit of Spurs will see an opportunity to buy a selection of charity T-shirts, reminding them who the daddies of North London football are. Mark, with your ties to Red Action, can you tell us any more? We got anything else planned for the day? Or
Well, we've got these T-shirts that have been produced with Forever in Our Shadow, nice big cannon overshadowing a very minuscule cockerel, and celebrating 50 years of Tottenham failure, or something along those lines. And they're going for a fiver. You can get them from the Rocket. They'll be there before the Newcastle game, and obviously before the Spurs game as well. And the profits will go to Centre Point Arsenal Charity this season.
Beautiful.
We're also working on some more giant flags. Forever in Our Shadow again has been mentioned, and maybe something along the lines of we are London's club rather than anybody else, which obviously could be reused for various other clubs. But I think it's very important that we do remind them that it is actually 50 years since they won anything of any note. And, you know, let's face it, if the boot was on the other foot, thinking back to when they beat us in the League Cup semi-final, when they brought a DVD out the next day and whatever, it's ridiculous. And they are our rivals. As much as Chelsea and Man United might be bigger fish now, Arsenal Spurs is the game as far as Arsenal supporters are concerned. And we need to put them in their place. And I don't see there's any problem with that. Even if we were, God forbid, to losing at the end of this month, they will always be inferior to us. And football is all about rivalries. And we've got a few other things planned, but we can't really say too much because, you know, certain the powers that be might not be too happy about some of them.
That's fair enough. I mean, I saw long-time Gooner contributor Brian Dawes last Thursday, who is trying to get something underway to get any Arsenal fan who wants it a golden anniversary card to send to your nearest and dearest Spurs fans, wishing them all the very best on this, the 50th anniversary.
I thought maybe I'm going to put a request in for the music at halftime to play the theme tune from Hawaii 5-0 and maybe get it from Mr. Bill Blanchflower or something.
That's fantastic.
Whether they will fall for that, you never know, do you?
A section of number ones from 1961, if indeed they've got a vinyl player at Ashburton Grove. Tim, what were your favourite Arsenal Tottenham memories?
My family's a 50-50 split between Arsenal and Spurs, so...
You're adopted. I'm sorry to hear that. I'm sorry to hear that.
So, you know, I've got sisters that are Tottenham fans, I've got sisters that are Arsenal fans. So, you know, it's a big thing in my family. I think my favourite memory would have to be one of my first North London derbies. Would have been at Wembley, the 93 semi-final. I was at the other end of the pitch that Adams scored in the fourth row, sitting with some family members that were Tottenham fans, and I was 9 years old at the time, and that was probably my favourite North London derby memory, other than obviously in 2004 winning the league there. In fact, I think quick anecdote: my favourite ever memory of a Tottenham Arsenal game was after we won the league there in 2004. We got a police escort to Tottenham Hale. We got on the tube, and we were told when we got on the tube, won't stop at Seven Sisters. So we're all on there having a good sing and a bit of a celebration. Train pulls in at Seven Sisters. About 200 to 300 really quite nasty looking Tottenham fans on the platform. It's about 2.5 hours after the game, so they've been waiting a long time. Bottles are coming at the carriage, and we're all standing there thinking, oh God, we're sitting ducks. The door's never opened. The tube slowly chugs off, and obviously, big brave people that we are, you know, we rush to the windows.
At that juncture, absolutely. Yeah,
with plenty of gesticulations. I don't know if it's my imagination, but I'm convinced the tube driver even drove very, very slowly as we pulled away from that platform.
You hear this, Bob Crowe? You hear what you're doing to this country? Wonderful. Mike, your favourite Arsenal Spurs memories?
I'm going to go back a little bit further. I think my one is still 87... League Cup semi-final, both games at the Lane, and you know the first game we were there with. For those younger generation listeners amongst us, and I'm sure there are some, we lost the first leg at Highbury 1-0. We went one down in the second leg, and that was the score. We were two down on aggregate at half time, and Spurs memorably gave out details of how their fans could get tickets for the final, and. Lo and behold, we stormed back, got two goals, took it to a third game, back at White Hart Lane, thank God, because it just made it a fantastic night. Again, we went one down, 8 minutes to play, I think it was, and Ian Allinson.
Big fat Ian Allinson, handlebar moustache.
Somehow managed to turn the ball in at the near post past Ray Clements, and then Rocky, bless him, banged one in the last minute. Take us to Wembley, and that was the start of the George Graham era.
Absolutely, very much.
I'd settle for a repeat of that sort of performance this year, even though it can't be at Spurs, but we've already done them this year in the Carling Cup, haven't we? So. But that was a great memory, great night.
Mark, your favourite Arsenal Tottenham moment?
Well, Mike has stolen my thunder a bit there, because I would agree with him totally. That night was just absolutely incredible, and for anyone of that age group that was there that night, I think you speak to anybody, and it was just, it brings the hairs up in the back. What hairs I've got left on the back of my neck. In fact, I get a bit choked up about it when I think of Rocky scoring and things like that. And as well, you know, the early 80s, Spurs were a good side, and we'd suffered a bit at their ends. But that night, we really came of age, and you felt like all the boys together, they were youngsters coming through, and they were our team. That was the thing. It was all, you know, we all stood together. And, you know, you hear these stories now when you go to White Lane and people, but we come out that night and, you know, the Seven Sisters Road was just red and white everywhere. And so I would go for that. And also I think there's so many memories. Pat Jennings, when he got on This Is Your Life, do you remember that one? That was another one that was quite a funny night. I remember being in the wrong end of the ground for some reason.
We have to explain This Is Your Life for some reason.
For some reason, I was in the Paxton Road end that night. I can't quite work out why. But another thing, I remember my granddad going to the, when we won the double in 71. So obviously I wasn't there, but I remember listening on the radio and what have you, and my granddad leaving at about 3 o'clock in the afternoon to go there. And I think he just about got in the ground and things like that. So many memories. We've had such great times there. And something that they never have. And I think, you know, you look at it now and they say about, oh, it was all talk last year, the balance of power shifting and whatever. Can you ever imagine that we would go 10 years or whatever it was without beating Spurs? Even if we were shit.
I'd be in a goal down for 10 minutes against Tottenham, let alone anything else.
It would never happen. Even in the 60s, it never happened. So, yeah.
If there are any Spurs fans listening to this and you want to send us details of your favourite Spurs victories over Arsenal, you can email us at hahaha@hotmail.gofuckyourself. Mike, on to slightly more business-related matters. I understand that you attended the recent Arsenal AGM. For those of us amongst the proletariat, why don't we paint the picture of what happens? Is it champagne, caviar, cocaine and whores? Dwarves with trays on their head, that kind of thing?
You have been. Some years ago I purchased a share and that let me into the AGM. With the shares going at 11.5 grand a pop now, I wouldn't recommend it if all you want to do is go to the AGM. It's not the most exciting hour you're going to spend. But, you know, you go along and you listen to Peter Hillwood and... Bless him, he's always entertaining. Doesn't mean to be, but he is. It's so stage managed now that if you're going along expecting to get anything interesting, you're going to be very disappointed. Questions have to be put forward in advance. I'm sure that the only ones that get selected are the ones that they can answer without causing any controversy. Interesting question this year was, the PA system is a bit too loud, can you be turning it down? Peter Hillwood did point out, in fairness to him, that we had a similar question about 4 or 5 years ago when we were still at Highbury, saying the PA system is a bit too quiet, so clearly we haven't got it right yet. But,
so Peter Hillwood is pretty much stone deaf,
yeah,
is my understanding.
Allegedly. What else was asked? There was one of the questions was from Maria Petri, who I'm sure is well known to Arsenal fans. She asked about the reserve game and the fact that all the reserve games are being played behind closed doors during the winter months, which was generally well received by the audience, but was dodged by the board, basically saying it's the pitch, it's not very good at Barnet, and that's why, and our players don't like playing on not very good pitches. Sod the next generation of fans who might want to see them occasionally. It's not exciting. You get a cup of tea and a biscuit at the end. That's about the most exciting bit.
Nice, fair enough. It sounds like a shamble. Yeah, I'm reading an article in the most recent issue of the Gooner. I mean, I've been led to believe that things are much better under the stewardship of Ivan Gazidis than they were under David Dean or Keith Edelman. I mean, Tim, I mean, you know the author of this piece particularly well. I mean, you know, joking aside, and you know, the stage managed AGM, I mean, Christ, I mean, AGMs at football clubs 15 years ago, I mean, I think they're alien concepts to everybody. I mean, look, playing the devil's advocate, considering the sheer ineptitude of our club in concluding transfers since Gazidis took over, the failure to complete the Xabi Alonso, Pepe Reina, Mark Schwarzer deals, have we actually signed Andre Arshavin yet? I still don't think anybody's completely sure. Are things really as good as you think they are?
On the transfer front, I think that's a reflection of the shift in football in general. I don't think that's exclusive to us. Contract laws, for anyone that's sad enough to read about it, like I am, has shifted a lot in football with the Webster ruling and stuff like that. So actually negotiating a transfer nowadays isn't that easy. And actually, if you look around this summer, even clubs like Chelsea and Man United didn't do much business. So no, I don't think that's anything that's particular to us or a particularly recent phenomenon, no.
Fair enough. Erudite, to the point, and I appreciate it. Okay, time for some internal Gooner-related matters now, and where to start. Well, this is why I think we should do a vodcast rather than a podcast. You can't see us at home, viewers, but in front of us on this table in the whatever community centre we are just off the Avenel Road, we've got pictures of every single Arsenal kit through the ages. Mike, would you care to shed some light on why we're looking at this?
Okay, for the last, I don't know how many years now, probably the last 15 or so years, the Gooner has produced a calendar every year to give away in the issues to our loyal readership. This year's theme is going to be kits through the ages. But we're not going to do every kit because that would be quite boring and quite easy.
And there's not 78 months in the year.
We have that problem as well. So we thought we'd try and pick out 12 kits. I'm not sure whether it's our favourite kits or the most talked about kits.
Mark, looking across at all of these, any of these evoke any particular happy or sad memories for you, or, you know, sartorial faux pas during the 80s and 90s?
Obviously the 91-93 bird shit kit is a bit of a faux pas, but I know it's very popular with some people, but the one that registers me looking at it more and more is the old 77-78 away kit with the big blue cannon in the middle of the chest. And Arsenal versus Orient, FA Cup semi-final.
Oh, great show.
Malcolm McDonald scored a goal off about four deflections and still claimed it. And one of the things that, even the match sticks out in my mind, but before him, was actually queuing up for tickets outside Highbury. And the queue went up past the clock end, round the far end of the ground, back down the other side, and I started queuing outside the North Bank entrance, thinking that I would never get a ticket, but we did. We all got tickets, and we had a great day out. I think there's about 40,000 Arsenal there and about 5,000 Orient, and that kit always, you know, Malcolm McDonald charging through centre forward with that on. That's bringing a lot of memories back.
Mike, any of these making you think of any particularly pivotal days in your Arsenal supporting life?
Oh God, so many of them. I mean, you look back now, and you know, we've got all the red kits in front of us, some with white sleeves, some with partial white sleeves, unfortunately. I have to say, I look back at both the home and away kits from the 88-89 season, and there are just so many memories attached to those, not least that night at Anfield, but you know, there were quite a few others as well. I don't know, Alan Smith in that 88-89 away shirt for me. Goal at Anfield, yes, is a memorable one. But I remember early in the season at Forest, him and Marwood combining for goals there. But I think we won 4-1.
4-1, yeah, absolutely. Yeah. I remember a goal down.
That was a good day.
Stevie Bold's first goal for the club.
Near post flick on, wasn't it? What a surprise. You've hit the nail on the head. I mean, not only are we trying to look at pick out kits, but we're trying to pick out players that we remember in those kits. And I have to say that the 91-92 birdshit kit, as Mark called it, or chevron kit, or tractor
bruised
kit,
bruised banana.
There are so many descriptions of it. Ian Wright.
It is Ian Wright. Ian Wright in that shirt. What's a centre forward doing wearing number 8? I remember thinking to myself.
It was the shirt he made his debut in at Leicester, but he also wore it the following Saturday away to Southampton, although I think he wore it with white shorts.
Well, he did wear white shorts only to a clash, absolutely.
So it wasn't quite the full kit, but yes. But yeah, Ian Wright in that shirt for me, that's the one I remember him most in.
Tim, what are you looking at?
Well, that's a memorable one for me as well, because I think everyone looks at the kit from probably when they first started supporting the club. I first went to Highbury in 92, so we were using that kit as an away kit at the time. So that and Anders Limpar, who was my favourite player at the time, but also the home kit from that time as well, because I think that was the first Arsenal shirt I ever had. The 90-92 splodges.
Lovely collar on that shirt though, with AFC.
Yes,
within
yes,
the circular
right.
collar.
Yeah,
classy.
Yeah. And that and Paul Merson in that. I think that really brings back memories from my first ever trips to Highbury. and one of only three Arsenal shirts I actually own nowadays, along with the Bruce Banana, which I'm going to insist on calling it. But I think everyone knows the 82-83 green away kit, which is just so horrible that it's somehow nice.
Now, you see, if they had the
almost
current...
almost worn ironically, but I don't know, there's just... It's a bit like Coventry's chocolate brown away kit from the 70s. It's so awful and horrible that actually it's got a little something about it. It's just a bit different.
I'm just looking at some of these. I mean, apparently from 1967 to 1969, when we went away, we actually went in fancy dress as Scotland with a dark navy blue shirt and white shorts, Jings Crivens and Help My Bulb. There are some absolute stunners here, absolute Bobby Dazzers. I mean, going back to the green shirt, I mean, if we had the current commercial team in place, they'd be telling us something about Herbert Chapman and tradition. And, you know, it's what the boys would have wanted. I mean, crikey.
Well, be very aware that, you know, it's the 125th anniversary coming up. So, commercial department could well be coming out with something very interesting.
Let's go back.
New kit,
Red Current has been strongly mentioned again.
Oh, well, let's go. Hang on, where's 1886 on here? I mean, where?
I didn't go back.
You didn't go that far. I'd risk of printing off a fourth page of all colour football kits. Mike decided he wanted to instead pay the mortgage this month.
I think we only played one game in 1886, and I don't think they actually had a kit. I think they just vaguely wore blue shirts and then. That was it. So
they wore their overalls from the
arms factory.
Yeah.
Crikey, there are some absolute stunners here. There really are.
If any listeners have got any thoughts on this that would want to contribute towards the calendar, please email us at.
I'm not too sure. I mean, if only there was an online web portal that had recently been revamped. hang on. Sorry, just my topic list here. Apparently, according to what's written in front of me, the online Gooner website has received a bit of a revamp. Mike, can you tell us why? And are there any further changes planned? And is this truth and evidence that you charge far too much for the Gooner? And this is where the hard-earned cash is going. Thanks for the Chinese tonight, by the way. It was cracking.
Okay, the website, it has been given a bit of a revamp, bring it up a little bit more up to date. We were still probably about 4 years behind everyone else with the technical stuff that I don't understand, so I couldn't begin to explain. Rob, who is our webmaster, has spent much of this year so far tweaking it and listening to me being Mr. Pedantic and go, could you move that one more centimetre over to the left, please? I hope people generally think it's better, an improvement. It's a bit more colour in it, a bit more pictures. We still plan to carry on working on it. We want to add readers' comments to, or allow people to comment on articles as BBC website and various other websites have got. So that's something to look out for. And the forum is next on our target to try and give that a bit of a revamp as well.
Be easy to improve that. You need to just get rid of some of the people who comment on it all the time.
Mark, are there any names in particular?
No, I'm not going to any names. They know who they are. Mainly based in Ireland, I think.
The forum is great for letting all Arsenal fans.
Exactly. Yeah. Fair play.
I take
it back, but I mean it.
Before we go, an idea that I thought was quite nice, slow work day today, to get to know your Palace. We do have an adoring public out there, and both of them have written in, just to try and get a bit more, to know a bit more about us. I mean, guys, we're all Gooners. Where do you sit? Have you got any rituals? And, you know, when do you arrive and leave? Tim?
Okay, rituals, 4 pints of Guinness before the game.
Good man.
4 pints of Guinness after the game. I sit nowadays. I sat in the clock end at Highbury. I used to man the barrier in row 4, so that was interesting. Gone a bit more upmarket at the corporate stadium. Gone for the east upper near the halfway line.
Oh, very nice.
Great view. There's no atmosphere anymore anyway, so there's no point in hunting for that. It's been an interesting transition from sitting. You know, within spitting distance of away fans for all those years, and now being kind of up in the posh seats where everyone applauds nicely and nobody likes my language.
Mark, how about yourself?
Well, I sit in the red action section or red section or the bear pit, as we like to call it.
Beautiful.
Well, I say sit. I've never sat in my seat.
Good for you.
The only time I do sit, and this is a ritual, is when we take a penalty. I've not watched an Arsenal penalty since Galatasaray. I just cannot watch him. And the funny thing was, the guy who sits in front of me, or stands in front of me, I've seen his face through the years, a regular away supporter. And first game at the Grove, and we got a penalty, whenever the first penalty was, and we both sat down and refused to watch the penalty. So it was really weird that this guy had the same ritual. So that's that. I think that's my main ritual, getting the ground as and when, really. I'm not, you know, I'll go to the Rocket before the game, see a few faces and what have you. So, funny enough, tonight I stopped off at the Bank of Friendship on the way here, which was our old drinking establishment. Mm. And it was nice just to sit in there, sat in my old seat. No one in there, of course. But yeah, brought back some good memories. And I think that's a good thing about Arsenal supporters, is quite a social crowd. And we all enjoy a beer and we can have a bit of a laugh about things. So don't take things too seriously. We all love our club and we support our club. I love where I sit in the ground. And, you know, we do try and create a bit of atmosphere. I just wish it would spread out a little bit further. I get infuriated when people say they don't know the words to the songs when the song is Arsenal. That strikes me as a bit strange.
And Mike, our esteemed leader, founder of this,
he's in the Diamond Club.
You started me. No, I still sit down in the lower tier. I did when we moved to the new ground. Actually, it was not obviously an opportunity for quite a lot of people to sort of sit together for the first time. Before, I'd sat with four people. Four of us all sat together, but you know, I knew people in similar areas of the ground, and now we all come together, and there's I think we've got a block of 14 seats now in the west lower. And it's a good crack. I enjoy it there. And I did contemplate moving into the upper tier actually when we moved stadiums, but the rest of the crowd weren't so keen. The extra money put them off. And I'm quite happy actually that I didn't, because I have watched a couple of games from the upper tier and I just feel a bit more detached from it. I know Tim said he sits up there, but I just feel it's a little that bit further away from the pitch and you're just not quite as involved in it. Pre-match rituals? None really. I tend to get in the ground quite late now, probably about 10-15 minutes before kick-off. Normally been for a drink in one of the pubs in Holloway Road. David asked when we all left. I assume none of us are leaving early, so I think take that as read.
You always ask just to catch someone out.
Can I just make a plea for the Arsenal-Wigan game? That night we need to really get behind the team. Whatever team he puts out.
First own cup tie in about seven or eight goes, isn't it?
Exactly, and it's a perfect opportunity. Tickets will be cheap. I'm sure a lot of season ticket holders will take up their option, but anyone else who's coming along on the night, let's really get behind the team. This is a big, big game. It's only Wigan, but it's only Wigan. Let's do it. Let's make Ashburton Grove into some sort of, you know,
Fortress, absolutely.
Siege mentality, whatever you want to call it, let's really go to town. And when we will give it our best thing, we'll get everything out on the website. Please, just do it.
It's fair enough, actually. I mean, we get through this. I mean, Sky know what they want, don't they? They want a two-legged semi-final between Arsenal and Manchester United. And with it being at home and away, you know, we get past Wigan, we get behind the boys, you know, we get a semi-final home against Man United. Fantastic. Okay. So there's just time for the usual reminder that our email address, including anything with regard to any shirts you'd like to see in the calendar, if you can't get through via onlinegooner.com, please feel free to drop us a line at goonerpodcast@gmail.com. Thanks once again to our sponsors, goonershirts.com, and a reminder that the current issue of the Gooner, number 209, is now on sale and will be available at the home matches with Spurs and Wigan. If you can't get down to buy it outside the stadium on match days, then you can still buy it online from the Gooner shop section on onlinegooner.com. We'll be back at the beginning of December, and until then, my thanks to the panel. My name's David Udo, and thanks for listening.